Daddy hunt with Colts and Underwood, and Daddy hunt is so often misunderstood, and Daddy hunt is so precious and good. The ride of your life is Daddy hunt.
Welcome back to Daddyhood, where we are exploring all the different paths to parenthood. I'm so excited for today. I'm joined by my friend, James Black. James, thanks for coming on Daddyhood.
Colton, thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right. I mean, obviously, I have a bio here, but we've been friends now for about 2 years.
Has it already been probably?
Yeah, I think so.
It feels like that.
I mean, I want to say, and I say this weirdly, but like I've been supporting family equality somewhat privately just because, mm-hmm. you know, the more outward you are, the more rumors get started.
Right, exactly. But
I remember as soon as I started my family planning, I reached out and I was like, how can I help support family equality?
Yeah, absolutely.
How can I get involved? You.
And we've been connected ever since.
So, yeah. And so much has changed on my journey. So much has changed on your journey since then. I can't wait to get all into it, but I'm going to read off the cue cards because your bio is very impressive.
And okay.
I want to make sure that I hit the marks. So. Sure. James Black joined Family Equality as the first Black CEO in 2021. Prior to joining Family Equality, James worked in the corporate sector, where they have a long history of senior roles in the defense, technology, and finance industries. James was selected as one of Out Magazine's Out 100 list, a compilation of the year's most impactful and influential LGBTQ+ people in the fall of 2022. My friend, James Black.
Yes, thank you.
So I have a lot to learn on my path to becoming a dad. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I'm very excited to learn about is dad jokes. So if you would let me practice my dad
Absolutely.
Jokes.
Absolutely.
Okay,
great. Let's practice.
So here we go. James, I'm so good at sleeping. I can even do it with my eyes closed.
Was that good? The joke?
That's the joke. Okay, well, I guess that's a successful dad joke then.
It is, because I don't really laugh at any of my dad's jokes.
Great.
But
it's mainly eye rolls, right?
It's eye rolls while he laughs at it.
That's the success of a dad joke.
That's success. If you get the eye roll.
A grunt, a moan.
A grunt, a moan, a walk away.
For sure.
And then you laugh hysterically. That's usually how it goes.
Yeah. Yes. And then I just uncontrolled. How good was that? A knee slap.
Right, a knee slap.
A knee slap. There we go.
You'll get to the knee slaps. It happens. Yeah.
Well, there's so many different topics that we can talk about.
Yeah.
But before we start, I would just love to hear from you to just explain to people, you know, what and who Family Equality is. I'm educated enough to know, but it took me a while. But just would love to hear from you about Family Equality.
Yeah. I think that Family Equality is one of the most important nonprofits in our country. Although people don't know who we are, we're a very small nonprofit. And that's because LGBTQ+ folks have been building families for years and years and years. And no one knows that, right? No one knows that we have been building families via adoption and surrogacy in traditional ways, if you will. And we are the organization who supports that. So Family Equality is a 44-year-old organization. And I love the name of your podcast, because when I think about daddyhood, I think about those dads who started Family Equality 44 years ago at the first gay lesbian march in Washington. And, you know, we are an organization that ensures that LGBTQ+ people can create families without economic barriers, without social barriers, without legal barriers. And we've been doing that work for decades now. And it's fortunate that we're doing the work, but it's also unfortunate that we still have to do the work because there are barriers. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just know this because of one of our other conversations, but can you share the name of what the organization
Absolutely.
Was called previously?
Yes, which I love too. So the organization was called the Gay Fathers Coalition.
I love it.
Like, it gives me goosebumps just saying it, right? Yeah. The Gay Fathers Coalition. And yeah, I mean, this group of gay dads met and said, look, we're going to parent our children, right? Mm-hmm. Having children in the 70s as a gay person after coming out of straight marriages and after finding out who you really were, and I think you understand that journey, right? And still wanting to be a parent and parent their children and then being told, no, you cannot parent your children. They weren't going to take that. They weren't going to take no for an answer. So the fact that these guys got together and said, we're going to build this coalition and we're going to support each other and make networks and resources. And then to know that 44 years later, we're now Family Equality. It's an amazing story.
Yeah. Well, I'm honored to be partnered with Family Equality on this podcast and to be supporting you and your organization and everything you're doing for families like mine.
Yeah.
And to be able to fight for our rights, to be able to represent us, to be able to continue just to educate America on these humans that are trying to create families.
Exactly.
You know, I know one thing that kept me in the closet for as long as it did was my desire to want to be a father. I did not think, I did not see, and I didn't think there was a path to be a dad as a gay man. You know, and that all also comes down to just representation in our own community. While we're very expressive at times, you don't get to, it's not flashy or cute or sexy to be, you know, the father and have your family out in front. You don't, that doesn't make the, you know, the headlines.
Doesn't make the headlines.
So you don't get to see it, especially for closeted men who aren't really looking for it and don't want to look for it.
You don't see
so
it.
I just, you know, that is, it's been such an amazing last few years after coming out of just educating myself, not only on who I am and who I want to be as a gay man, but just our community as a whole.
Absolutely. And
I don't know. I mean, the work that you guys are doing, like, you have a long ways to go. And I recognize that.
We have a long way to go. People believe because we're in 2023, or excuse me, oh my God, 2024. That, and we've made progress. We have marriage. People believe that we've won. Everything is great. And even though we won marriage, there were still barriers to creating families.
Yep.
So there, we have a long way to go until any of us can actually have a family without barriers. And it doesn't even matter how much money someone makes, right?
Right.
You can be the wealthiest person, but if you are a gay parent, a lesbian parent, there are going to be barriers, even social barriers, right? We have to deal with that. And you talk about representation. I agree. I mean, how many LGBTQ plus folks do you see on television who are parents or, you know, with strollers, you know, walking around the grocery store? I mean, I don't know why, you know, we don't see it. And I think a lot of it is that we still stay in the closet somewhat, maybe different areas and different locations. Yep. We don't, but typically we do.
Yeah. I mean, and you mentioned it, and I want to stick on this topic for a second, but barriers. So let's talk about them. Cause I know, obviously you just mentioned there's social barriers, there's economic barriers. And also, I mean, discrimination barriers, just pointing out the obvious, depending on what state you're in. Can you talk just about, you know, probably the top three barriers that you see right now just in expanding your family as somebody who's in the LGBTQ plus community?
Yeah. I think one of the first barriers that comes to mind is this idea of parentage and that you have to establish a legal parent-child relationship. You're probably learning about that through your process. And some folks in our community don't know that, right? So you could have a, I always bring up this example of the lesbian couple in Oklahoma who were married and they had a child and then they divorced. And the parent who did not give birth to the child did not do second parent adoption, did not establish a second parent adoption, that parent-child relationship, a legal relationship. And what ended up happening is that through this, the legal process, the judge in Oklahoma said that she is not the mother and the donor is now the father because the mother, her spouse, her ex-spouse started dating the donor.
Oh, wow.
Right. And so this idea of legal parent-child relationship, I think, is going to be continued to be a theme because of these, some of the extremist judges that we're seeing, right?
Yeah.
And so, and as we continue to see more attacks on our community, I think you're going to see things like that, right? So it's I think establishing that relationship, legal parent-child relationship, is really important.
Is that just like lack of knowledge?
Like I think it's a lack, it's absolutely a lack of knowledge. Okay. And we released a parentage report about a month or so ago to educate the community on those challenges because a lot of people they don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's unfortunate because I think you can't rely on if we get a divorce that everything's going to be great. The other barrier, I believe is, you know, I think when I think about discrimination, I think about the foster care system. And there are about 400,000 children who go through the system every year. About 120,000 of them are waiting for adoption because some of them are reunification with their
Hold
families.
On, can you say that number again? 120,000.
About 120,000 are waiting for adoption.
Wow.
And about 20,000 age out
and
every
400,000 go through our system.
Go through the system. And some of those are reunified with various family members or with their parents. But about 120,000 of them are waiting adoption. And you think about that LGBTQ plus people are 7 times more likely to foster and adopt, but there are still 13 states
that
can
allow them.
That can make the decision that we are not aligned with your religious beliefs, and so therefore we can say no to this child who's in foster care.
Wow.
Who needs a family, who's waiting for their forever home, and who would be better suited to have a family like yours and mine, right? Because a lot of those kids are queer.
Yeah.
And so they would be better suited to be with a Colton or with a James, and they're sitting in foster care.
Yeah.
And so the barriers, I think, there is not just barriers to us fostering children who need it and the fact that you can be denied, but to think about all the LGBTQ plus children who are part of the system.
Right.
Who are aging out.
Hmm. And yeah. What is the age for aging out in the foster?
I believe it's 18.
It is 18.
Yeah, I believe it's 18. Yeah. And if you think about when they're aging out, there's a path that they typically take. And that's unfortunate too. So it's just an ongoing issue, right? They've aged out and now where do they go?
Yeah. And can you talk about the support that Family Equality lends to, you know, these families and to these kids?
Well, I would say that the support is via legislation, right? And so we have we call it our flagship legislation, the John Lewis Every Child Deserves a Family Act.
Mm-hmm.
And via that legislation, when passed, and we've been working on it for quite some time, it's a bipartisan legislation, which is great.
Yeah.
You know I love that.
Yes.
via that legislation, when passed, it's going to do a few things. One, it's going to remove the barriers to LGBTQ plus folks who want to foster and adopt. So those 13 states who are holding strong, that would be eliminated.
Yep.
It's going to transform the foster care system. So children who are LGBTQ plus, who don't have the supports from their, the caseworkers, right? They don't have the cultural competence to understand what these kids need. They're going to require training, right?
Yeah.
And so those people will go through training. I think it's a transformational piece of legislation because I think it's going to educate the country on the issues of foster care and what's truly going on. Because I don't think that people are truly educated around. People know there's a foster care system. I don't think they think that the barriers, the kids who are suffering, I don't think people know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, so as someone I'm working on a piece of legislation for mental health that's bipartisan too. And the one thing that I think both of our pieces have in common is it's a human issue.
It's a human issue.
It's when you break it down to every kid deserves a home, every child deserves a home, we should all be looking and saying, yes, how are we making this political? And everything becomes political in this climate, and it's intimidating for a lot of people out there,
I know,
myself included, especially just with how it can affect career, how it can affect, you know, relationships, friendships, family, you know, dynamics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For the life of me, I don't understand why a legislator would want a child to stay in foster care rather than having that child live with an LGBTQ plus person. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Right. I mean, I don't know. I've only been out here for a few years, and that's the reason I started this whole podcast is because I wanted to humanize issues that I felt like when most people hear something and they have an attached assumption about it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and myself, I was included in that, you know, as a closeted man, I was like, oh, if I'm gay, I can't be a dad. Like there goes my family, my white picket fence. I can't have the life that I thought I could have. And I've been so wrong about that. And now I sort of feel like this is an opportunity for me to bring people along, to educate them, to show them that, like, we all don't have to agree 100% of the time, but we can support one another and lead with love.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you thought that as a closeted gay man, I think about the comment I just made about legislators. So they don't have the education, they probably don't know anyone who's LGBTQ plus.
Right.
So there is an educational aspect that I think is missing where they don't see our families. They don't know that our families are just like other families.
Yep.
I mean, we have the terrible twos and the dirty diapers and the tantrums and the bedtimes and all those things. Like we have literally all of those things. Like if we could all get together and see that we have more similarities than differences, especially when it comes to parenting.
Yeah.
Then I think that we would be in a better place.
I mean, I completely agree with
you.
I just think, you know, the work that you're doing in the legislation, you know, as someone who, when I reevaluated what I wanted to do with mental health mm-hmm. and with my nonprofit, you know, I asked myself, how can I affect the most people? And I've, you know, came up with this bill that I wanted to introduce. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about the bill that you're working on and the legislation that you currently have and what the game plan is around it?
Well, let's see. So the John Lewis Every Child Deserves a Family Act we've been working on for, I would say, probably over 10 years. John Lewis, I believe, are you familiar with John Lewis?
I'm not.
Civil rights hero. He marched with Martin Luther King, well known, and this was a piece of legislation that was near and dear to his heart. And when he passed away, he passed the baton to someone named Danny Davis, who is now the bill sponsor. This bill, again, I don't have a lot of the history because it was decades ago, right, that mm-hmm. we started this and the need for it, but it is bipartisan in nature, and everyone knew that we needed to have this bill have support from both sides, mm-hmm. and thank God that we were able to get, you know, both Democrats and Republicans who do believe what you said earlier, that every child deserves a family, even if that family happens to be LGBTQ+.
Yep.
We have reintroduced the bill multiple times. It has not gotten passed yet, and I think you know how difficult that is.
Yeah.
And right now we're waiting for a reintroduction.
Got it.
And, you know, a lot of times reintroduction has a lot to do with Congress and what's going on there, but we're waiting for a reintroduction.
Okay.
I think the other piece of it, just not the John Lewis Every Child Deserves a Family Act, but there's also other legislation that
yep.
that I'd love to mention.
Yeah.
And so we think about not a legislation piece that we're passing, but one that we're fighting. I would love to talk about that.
Yeah.
And as it relates to...
I think, you know, yeah. taking a step back to just, yeah. you mentioned fighting against, you know, what are some of the bills that you've seen so far and how many last year? You know, I know now we're in 2024, but last year alone, we set a record for how many anti-trans and yeah. anti-LGBTQ+ bills were introduced in...
Yeah, I would say, so first let's think about the end of 2022 was about 300 bills, which was, we thought that was a record. 2023, about 550 plus
wow.
bills were introduced.
And how many were successfully passed?
And only, geez, I would have to say, and we'll check this, I think probably 90% of those failed.
Okay.
I believe, actually, let me take that back. 90% failed in 2022. I don't have the number because 2023 just closed, so I'll have to get that from my team.
Okay.
We do know, if you think about 2022, and of the 300, only 90% failed, and so only 10% got through. I think
right.
that's successful.
Yep.
And so we need to get the numbers for 2023 as that just closed. But to put things into context, in 2018, there were under 100 anti-LGBTQ+ bills. So
wow.
under 100 in 2018. And then you jump to 2022 and what we saw in 2023, and
yep.
you see that increase. That's it's scary.
What do you think it is right now with our society and where we're at in culture of just attacking a human being's existence and them just wanting to live their life
yeah.
and create their family and do their own thing?
Miseducation.
Okay.
And I think there are a loud few who are playing out of an old playbook that has been used for quite some time. So let's think about Florida. And I don't know if you know the woman, Anita Bryant.
I've heard of her.
Yeah. So yep. Anita Bryant she was like in Florida orange juice commercials and Miss Oklahoma. But she was also an anti-LGBTQ+. I don't know if you want to call her an activist, but she truly believed that we were not human. And she did a lot of damage in Florida in the 70s. And that playbook and what Anita believed is still very much so prevalent in Florida and other states now.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this old playbook of dehumanizing LGBTQ+ people. In fact, this country has a history of dehumanizing LGBTQ+ people. And so now we have this loud few who are miseducating people, who are using the same rhetoric as Anita Bryant and other folks from back in the 70s, and people are believing it.
Yeah.
And I think there's a, if you have misinformation, you have to have something else to neutralize it. And we don't, what's the thing that's neutralizing it? I don't think we really truly have that. So what do
right.
people do? They believe it. They believe what they're hearing. And then you bring in the transgender community, and people do not know anyone who's transgender. We'll have to check this stat, but I think we know that 30% of Americans, only 30% of Americans know someone who's transgender.
Sounds about right.
Right. So, so I don't think we have the story and the education to sort of neutralize the hate and the rhetoric that we're hearing. So people believe what they hear, unfortunately. And I think the people who are using this as a tool know that, right?
Right.
And a lot of people are getting their information from TikTok and Facebook and all those sorts of things. And so what's the, this is part of the neutralization, right? What we're doing right here. How do we educate people so they know that what they're hearing is not so? And there needs to be more of that.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, I obviously have viewed Instagram, TikTok, social media in general as a positive for me, because I grew up in a smaller town in Illinois where I didn't have a lot of representation. I didn't know many gay people. I did not get to see that. I chose not to watch it on television because I wanted to run for myself. I did not like.
So would you just turn it off?
I would turn it off. I would ignore it. I would, you know, but when I got horny, I looked, you know, I looked for it. But you know, it was, for me at least, social media, I viewed it as a pro, because I started getting to educate myself, but I also started getting introduced into characters that were gay for the very first time. And it, I was like, oh, okay. Like, oh, they can have X, Y, and Z. They can. And I was always like, from their point of view, it's like, you know, I was, it's like that, that life is never for me. That was sort of how I treated it. Right. And it was mainly just because I did from a young, young age have like this dream of having that perfect family.
Yeah.
And the perfect family was not being gay. So now that I'm here, it's like, you can still, I really just want to be a beacon for hope for a young boy, young girl out there that is queer, that like you can march to your own beat and do your own thing and still have your perfect family.
Yeah. Especially kids who are like the Midwest, right? That's where you're from.
Yeah.
And I don't, they don't see that. They don't see Coltons.
Right. I don't think I've talked much about it, just because like when it first came out, it caught a lot of flack, was my Netflix show. I think when I first, that first all sort of came out, it was just very messy, transparently, on how it came out. The show got leaked at the same time that I was coming out on Good Morning America, and it was like a little bit of a PR mess and all of these things. And, you know, while there was a lot of people that had a lot of opinions and saying, you're monetizing the queer experience, you're doing all this, they didn't get to see the people I was meeting with behind the scenes, you know, showing up and supporting these different organizations. And like, that's besides the point. But what I want to point out is there's not a day that goes by to this day where I don't have a DM or a message from somebody in middle America that just said, hey, I just binged your show. Thank you so much. Like, I needed this. I was borderline suicidal. I was depressed. And not only just in our country, it's, that's the power of Netflix too, is it's international. So I've just sort of taken pride, and that's sort of my goal here with this is, you know, while my husband and I have chosen to remain somewhat private in our lives, this is a way for me to do it that's not as intrusive as Netflix cameras in my house.
Right, right, exactly. But I still, you can really control it.
Well, not only control, it's just like, you know, it's a way for me to educate people out there, and also, you know, let people have fun. They've been with me since I've been 25. So now this is like a way to bring them along with this ride, have some fun with them.
Is that what you and The Bachelor 25?
I was 20, I think it was 25 or 26 when we were filming that.
Wow.
Yeah.
And do you have, so you have like some of the same audience that has followed you through your journey, which I think that's amazing.
My, it's really interesting when, you know, when I talk to companies or brands to represent and to come to a speaking engagement or to post about their brand on my social medias, they ask for my demographics. And it's always really interesting to this day, sort of the breakout of, you know, my demographics, even after coming out. I'm still over 70% female following. Most of them are, I would say, I don't know what middle age is these days, but like 24 to 40 would be, I think, the age range. And the states are still very much middle of the country. I mean, there's obviously like California presence, New York presence, but it is very much Texas, you know, Illinois, Iowa, Missouri. So it's just like, And I think that's what gets me excited about this mm-hmm. is now I just want to serve as a bridge. I'm sure there's people that are listening to this right now or are going to that might not agree on every stance or position yeah. that I have. And I'm here to say, like, I want that.
That's good.
Like, that's okay. That's good. That's healthy. Yeah. You're thinking on your own. And yeah. and also, I hope by the end of this, maybe I can change your mind or at least provide you an opportunity to ask 3 or 4 questions the next time you sit down with somebody who doesn't agree the same way, yeah. you know, agree Absolutely. With everything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the opening of the discussion, and we need to have more discussions like this in this country.
Yep.
And I don't think that we are having, you know, this, you and I, when we talk one-on-one, we're not talking about only one side. We're talking about how do we bring both sides together. Right. We're talking about that everyone is not going to agree on everything. And I think we get too hung up sometimes in this country about you have to agree with everything that I'm saying. And therefore, and if you do not, then the conversation is over.
Right.
We're not going to move the needle that way.
Right.
We can't do that. If we could have more critical conversations and vulnerable conversations in this country and then respect each other, I think, again, we would be further along. Like, how do we have more of those?
Totally. Yeah. And that was one thing Jordan and I, you know, we had a lot of conversations when we were talking about expanding our family and why mm-hmm. we wanted kids. We want to put great human beings out into the world. That's what we're like priding ourselves on.
Yeah.
And you can only do that by being patient and, mm-hmm. and slow. And the two of us, you know, we don't agree on everything either, but I think that's healthy. That's part of a relationship. That's part of a dynamic. And we've sort of lost that as a culture and as a society. And, mm-hmm. I think shifting back to focusing on, you know, humans, like yeah. families, these kids need a home.
And everyone deserves a family.
And everybody deserves a family. Child.
I mean, like, family is like at the core of humanness, at the core of even this country, yeah. family. So how can we say that one family is not as important as the other, or that our families are not true families? Sometimes you hear that, or well, you're not a family.
Right. Well, and who are you to tell someone else that they right. aren't deserving of a family?
Right.
Are or aren't.
Right, it's exactly.
Just,
yeah.
It's not your place.
Yes.
So while we move through this series, you know, in my partnership with Family Equality, we're going to be sitting down with surrogates. We're going to be sitting mm-hmm. down with egg donors, sperm donors, pretty much the entire process of mm-hmm. what it looks like to grow our family. Who has impacted you or motivated you along your journey so far?
Along my parenting journey?
Yes.
Wow. You know, I would say that I found a group of friends who were parents before me, who were able to provide counsel and the conversations that I needed to have, because oftentimes as LGBTQ plus parents, we're trying to get it right mm-hmm. so much that we're just paralyzed sometimes. And so I have to say I have a great group of friends. When I found Family Equality, you know, I was a parent before I became the president of Family Equality. And when I found the resources on Family Equality and to understand that there were other parenting groups across the country that we could be reaching out to and connecting with, that was a great resource for me. And then I would say, you know, the small group of LGBTQ plus celebrities that are parents that we have out there, that's still part of my journey, right? That still helps me understand that, you know, we need to be loud and proud and talk about our journeys and our children. And that's, you know, exactly what we need to be doing. So, just a myriad of folks who continue to inspire me. And then I have to also say, like, my kids, when I look at my children and who they are at 9 years old, you know, thinking, and we adopted them and they were 6 weeks when we adopted them and now they're 9 years old. And to hear them say, I'm proud of my two moms. Or when they go into a new classroom, they are always like, we have two moms. They tell everyone. And I'm like, okay, I guess that's how you introduce it. They make me want to be a better person and to keep pushing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And on the flip side of things, what's been the most challenging?
Mm. The most challenging is when your children walk into the room and say, we have two moms, or the people who are not so nice.
Mm.
And how do you prepare your child for that? Because they're just innocent. And they just want to talk about their parents just and their families just like anyone else. And so the most challenging has been having to educate them that they're going to be people, even educators, who do not understand our family. I think another challenge has been prior to having children, again, just going through the process of trying to have children with which is already hard in itself, and just the discrimination.
Yeah.
It's hard enough to make this big decision to have to be a parent. And then when you have an organization, an adoption agency telling you that, no, you're not good enough, you don't deserve to be a parent, that's hard.
Right.
And many of us give up. Many of us give up on their path to parenthood. We don't even pursue it after, you know, a couple of no's or maybe even the first no. And so that, just to thinking back when we were on our path and how hard that was to hear those no's. And we did give up, and then we started again. And in this sort of like serendipitous moment after we gave up, my wife happened to just be on a website and saw an ad for an adoption agency. And it said, a mother of two in Ohio, pregnant with twins, open to all families. And so we said, okay, maybe this is the chance. Maybe this is ours. And that's how our boys entered into our life. And I think the other challenge is educating the educators. So not only do you have to send your children to school, which is also hard,
yeah.
You have to educate the teachers and the administrators because they don't understand our family dynamic. And so you're spending a lot of energy, not just sending your children to school with all the things that go on with children at school. You're also educating every teacher, every educator, every new school that you go to. Know this, you're going to have to educate the educators.
Yeah.
So your family is included in the classroom dynamic.
And I mean, I just know this because of keeping up with the news and what's happening right now in our country. In some states, that's not even possible. Right?
Of course. You think about Don't Say Gay in Florida.
Yeah.
I believe Iowa passed Don't Say Gay too. Yeah. And you know, to give you an example, you know, we heard from a lesbian couple in Iowa back in October, and they called us and they said, you know, we need to get out of Iowa now. One of our kids was at school and they were talking about their two moms, and the teacher said, you can't talk about your family here. We have that type of rhetoric or dynamic happening in schools. That's just, I can't even imagine that. So you're right. You can't even educate an educator. They can't speak to you about it. They're afraid they're going to lose their jobs.
Right. And I mean, it goes the other way too, where I've heard from some teachers that they can't even put the picture of their husband if it's, you know, a woman, they can't put the picture of their wife out and display for the children. And, you know, it's like, you know, what's our society and our world coming to if you can't be proud of the relationship you're in and family that you have?
Yeah, we're going backwards. I'll have to say that we have not seen, you asked me earlier, what's going on? What's the common theme with all of the anti-LGBTQ+ rhetoric? And what I can say is that, going back to this person, Anita Bryant, we've not seen this level of attacks on the LGBTQ+ community since 1979, since 77-79. So again, back to this playbook and folks like Anita and others, we're at this turning point. We truly are going backwards. And I think, again, this whole piece of educating people is going to be necessary now more than ever.
Why now? Why do you think we're getting attacked now?
I go back to a lack of education. And I go back to, also, there's more of us. There are 20 million people in this country identify as LGBTQ+.
Yep.
There are more of us in this country. About 4 million children have LGBTQ+ parents. I think there is a level of visibility that we do have now in terms of our existence. And I think that there's still a fear of us as well. And I do think that there are people who are weaponizing who we are. And they know that they can do that politically. And they're using that very strategically right now. So you think about all those things. There's more of us. There's more children, more families. And there is this, it's just kind of a wedge issue, right? And it's like, we can use this as a political pawn very strategically. And I think people are doing that, which is why it's so important to get both sides talking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just excited to continue educating people, talking through this process.
Yeah.
It's been eye-opening to me. I know I have a lot of privilege and I'm very blessed to be in the position that I'm in, but I have a team of, I think, 9 people that are helping me grow my husband, grow our family.
Yes.
Between lawyers and doctors and surrogates and a consultant and just like and we're in California, which is, I think, one of the more friendly states when it comes to growing your family. Mm-hmm. So if I can feel a little overwhelmed with the resources that I have and the knowledge that I have and everything, I couldn't imagine, you know, a single parent that wants to have a family in Texas, Florida, some of these states that are a little more challenging to do that in. And that, and that's what's inspiring, you know, me for all of this, is just like, how can I continue to help people
Yeah.
Right.
Yes,
like
absolutely.
You can, you only know what you know. And that's why I really feel called to helping with Middle America and being very patient with, you know, just people who are in my life and then also who have sort of gone with me on my journey of reality television, is just educating them slowly but surely. You know, like, hey, this is our experience.
We need to educate them. And one of the things we talk about a bunch in the movement is this need for allyship and allies.
Yes.
As we think about going into an election year and how a lot is on the line for our community, we need education, and then we need allyship more than ever, because those are the folks who are going to help bring us along. Those are the folks who are going to have conversations that you and I are not in.
Right.
When you and I are not in those rooms as LGBTQ plus people, we need our allies talking about our families, talking about us, talking about why it's important. And oftentimes they won't listen to you or I, right? Because we're the LGBTQ plus people. You're the gay folks in the room. Yep. But they will listen to an ally. They will listen to their religious aunt who has had some type of, you know, sort of turnaround on the issue.
Yeah.
If we can get those folks educated, and if we can get them talking about our issues to their friends, you know, I think that we'll make a lot of progress.
Yeah. And how, so how, for people listening right now, how can they help? How can they become allies? How can they support family equality? Where do they go?
Yeah. So first you go to familyequality.org to support our work. You can think about our, look at our programs. We have programs. We have our Family Week, which is our the largest LGBTQ plus family gathering in the world. So if you're an LGBTQ plus person or parent, please join us. You can sign up for action alerts. So that will allow you to understand when we need you to call, you know, one of your you know, senators, right?
Yeah.
Because we're trying to pass legislation or we're trying to fight legislation. You can get educated on our website and think about who are the families that you know and maybe in your community or in your family who maybe don't feel quite included, and get educated on how you should be talking about our families, how you should be talking to them. I know for me, when my family finally came around, it was really important for them to understand that they understood our family dynamic. And so we have those types of resources on our website too. Yeah.
Amazing. Incredible.
Yeah. And become an ally by, again, getting educated. And allyship is not just marching in the pride parades with us. That's not allyship. I don't call that, that's not authentic allyship to me. Authentic allyship is what I said earlier, is that when we are not in the rooms, that you're advocating for us in the rooms that I'm not in.
Mm.
That you are having brave conversations when I'm not around. Mm. Not, you know, allowing someone to spew rhetoric, and because there's not a queer person around, then you just allow it to happen. If you are a true ally, then you will stop that. And that's how we continue to move the needle in true allyship, authentic allyship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I would hope people out there would stand up for what's right and, you know, be able to call somebody out when they know it's misleading or misinformation and sort of change the positioning.
Absolutely.
Of it.
Yeah.
Well, like James said, go to familyequality.org to find out more about this amazing organization. I'm going to be linking it out here and also in the podcast. So, James, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm going to have you back on. I cannot wait for our second episode and our second round.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
What's up, guys? If you want more exclusive behind-the-scenes content, more access to me, all of the fun things, sign up for my Patreon right here. We'll link it out. Promise you, you do not want to miss this. Head on over and join me on Patreon.
Daddy Hood with Colts and Underwood, and Daddy Hood is so often misunderstood, and Daddy Hood is so precious and good. The ride of your life is Daddy Hood.